The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, as now many of you know, I have behind me here the statue of Patachara, one of the very important early nuns. One of the very important early nuns, who was a disciple of the Buddha, and and she's particularly important because the evidence that we have is that she was probably the most important of the nuns who was a teacher. She ordained other women to become nuns. She supported them. She urged them on to awakening, and she taught them. And some of them expressed their tremendous gratitude for her. So not only do we have one of the, here on our altar today, the exemplar of early Buddhist enlightened women, but also a woman who was a teacher for other nuns and a preeminent teacher in her own right. In the ancient texts, they say she was also a master of the Vinaya. She was foremost in understanding the monastic rules, the way of life of the monastics, of the nuns. What we know most about her, so today I want to talk about her some and talk about these early nuns, kind of as a great appreciation and for these important pioneers of Buddhism who really helped lay down the foundation for all the Buddhism that followed. The primary information we have, it comes from a canonical text, an early sacred text that's in the canon of early Buddhism. And that canon, that text is called the Teri Gata. It's the, Gata means verse, and Teri literally means elder, and it's an honorific title for a senior elder Buddhist nun. An elder monk is called a Tera. So Tera and Teris are these respectful titles for generally someone who's been a monastic for a long time, but also someone who's become enlightened. And so there's a anthology of poems having to do by these early Buddhist nuns. It's often said that they are poems by the early Buddhist nuns, and that could well be. But as we go through, if you went through the books, you'll see that it's not always so clear. You know, who the author is or who the speaker is, and sometimes it's clearly not one of the nuns who's speaking, and it's some of the poems are conversations back and forth. And this text, the verses of the early Buddhist nuns, is a, a remarkable text because it's for many reasons, it's also the earliest anthology of women's poetry that has survived or that exists in the present. So it's a very early anthology of poetry, and but it's a very unique poetry because it's a poetry of awakening, of enlightenment. And one of the strong features of this poetry is that these are enlightened women, women who are or become enlightened, and they express their enlightenment with great confidence, with great strength. It's unequivocal that they are now taking their place in the community of enlightened Buddhists and practitioners, in ancient text, making this statement that one is now enlightened is called a lion's roar, and they never refer to that term in the poetry, but it gives you a little bit of sense of the confidence or the strength with which they would take their place and say, you know, I am fully enlightened. There's about 40 different ways they say that in the texts, all these different synonyms for awakening and enlightenment. And it's in this text, the Teri Gata, that we find the most information about Patachara until many centuries later when there were commentaries written. And the commentaries tell lots of stories, and whether those stories are accurate of what happened in the time of the Buddha, we don't know, because they're a little bit fantastical, some of these stories, and so they have more of a quality of myth than they have of you know, of a historical record or something. And so first I want to say a little bit about more about this book of it, these book of verses by the nuns, and then read a little bit some of them, including the verses having to do with Patachara. And the ancient poetry in India often had moods, often called a rasa or flavor. And as I've translated these texts, the whole book, I translated it. And so I spent a lot of time living in it, being with these verses of the nuns. And I would say that for me, at least, that there were three predominant moods of this poetry. One was, or is, a lot of warmth. There's a warm feeling sometimes between the nuns, and very clear that the nuns are living in community, they support each other, and that they value each other as teachers, as supporters, and all that. And and so there's a sense of warmth comes across in these texts. The other mood is the confidence. I mean, these are confident women. They are not only in stating their enlightenment, but in really practicing and facing some of the nuns facing the tremendous challenges they had. You can feel that they're facing this in a strong, upright, dignified, powerful way. And you get a sense of these women. These women are not subjugated to anyone. They are independent, strong women, and they're not going to, you know, be less than any man, certainly. And that's a remarkable thing, given how much probably women were subjugated to men in ancient India. These nuns, they are not part of that. They are stepping into an independent life, autonomous life, very powerful life, where they stand strong for themselves. You get this mood of that confidence in the text. The other mood that I got picked up from the text is one of peace. That there is a sense of peaceful tranquility that comes with their enlightenment. Some of them were in turmoil coming to practice before becoming a nun, and you get a sense of that turmoil in the text. But it comes to a place of peace. And one of them says she now walks in peace, and now lives in the safety of peace. Kind of all these references to peace and tranquility comes across. But as I said, the predominant theme is that these women become enlightened with confidence, and they're not shy about talking how enlightened they are. In fact, there's a particular way that the enlightenment is described, full enlightenment is described, that generally in the early texts, it's only the Buddha talks about him this way, and that is he has attained the three knowledges. And more than any other early text, these nuns claim, I have attained the triple knowledge, just like the Buddha. In other words, they're not even going to, I don't know if there's bright languages, but they are holding themselves, I don't know if they would say equal to the Buddha, but they're certainly holding their enlightenment as equal to the Buddha. Or this is not a second-rate level of enlightenment. This is, you know, full enlightenment that they're confidently stating that they have. These nuns come from all kinds of walks of life. Some are old, some are young, a lot of them are mothers and wives, or had been mothers and wives. A good number of them are widows. A lot of them lost their children. Death in their family, death of their children, death of their whole family, was a big catalyst for becoming a nun and doing practice. Some were prostitutes or courtesans. Some were wealthy, some were poor. You find a whole range of different backgrounds that are being discussed, presented in this body of poetry. And to read a few of them to you, these poems, and then we'll get to Patachara. I said that there's a lot of emphasis on community, or the women supporting each other, and And you have this in some explicit in some of the poems. The first chapter has something like 23 poems. They're one verse poems, and most of the poems involve a wordplay with the name of the nun as a meaning, and so they play with that or they utilize that double meaning in the poem itself. And these first chapter is ones that I feel have the most warmth and kind of tenderness to them. And most of the poems is someone speaking to the nun. So this poem here is to the nun Mitta. Mitta is means friend. So that's her name, Mitta. And so someone's talking to her and says, Mitta, having gone forth out of faith, delight in friends. By cultivating skillful states, attain peace from bondage. So, or safety from bondage. So, delight in friends, is one nun tells another. And here's another one. It refers to the Buddha. He's called the sage, but this nun is talking to other nuns. To this world, the sage has taught and praised noble friendship. By associating with a noble friend, even a fool can become wise. Associate with good people, and one's wisdom will grow. By associating with good people, one will be freed from all suffering. So this idea of community and practicing with people and associating with people who are practicing or good people for the purposes of becoming free of suffering. So some of these one-verse poems at the beginning of the book, there's a woman whose name is Dhira, it means wise. Dhira, touch cessation, the happy stilling of concepts. Become pleased with freedom, the unsurpassed peace from bondage. Oh, here's one, somewhat famous one. It's her name is Freed in English, Mutta in Pali, but it means freed, and the one who is free. And this one, she's talking, and she exclaims. I put exclamation marks in my translation. Well freed, well, very well freed. I am freed from three crooked things: mortar, pestle, and my crooked husband. I am freed from birth and death. What leads to becoming has been pulled out. So some people like this poem a lot because the idea of maybe an oppressive life that she lived and maybe very limited with a husband who was not kind or supportive or was kind of crooked in some way. And the toil of mortar and pestle and being free from that kind of life maybe, and that maybe was, you know, not a good place for her to live. A good number of the nuns are old, and this one is a one-verse poem that's being spoken to an old nun. And it goes this way. Old one, be at ease, wrapped in the robe you made. For your passion is stilled, you become calmed, freed. Old one, be at ease, wrapped in the robe you made. For your passion is stilled, you become calmed, released. So, I get to Patachara. Here's one. Another poem that talks about how one nun supports another one. And it talks about the the challenges that they had, some of them practiced. Some of them practiced for many, many years as nuns and never attained any peace. So it's not like an easy process to attain enlightenment. But here's one. Her name is Uttama, which means most excellent. Not attaining mental peace and with no control of my mind, 4-5 times I left my meditation hut. I approached a nun who was trustworthy. She taught me the Dhamma, the aggregates, bases, and elements. I listened to the Dhamma as she instructed me. For 1 week I sat cross-legged in one spot, filled with joy and happiness. On the 8th day I straightened out my legs and shattered the mass of darkness. The mass of darkness, shattering the mass of darkness, is another way they talk about becoming enlightened. And it's kind of a metaphor, maybe the primary one is shattering the darkness of ignorance and kind of waking up and understanding clearly. And I like to think of it also as shattering the darkness of the ignorance, the societal ignorance that these women had to live with, where they were oppressed and treated sometimes as servants of their husbands and had to work hard and were often discriminated. I mean, often we're probably commonly discriminated in ways that we would be horrified if we kind of could see what their lives were like back then. And some of them were, had these challenges of being married off by their parents and then not wanting to be married and wanting to be ordained instead. It was one of the only ways, very few ways, a woman could be independent in the ancient world was to become a nun. So it has a very different meaning, maybe the idea of ordination as a nun back then that it would do today, where it's easier to be autonomous and an independent woman than it was back then. So this was a real big step in stepping out of society in this way. So let me see if I can find the Patachara poems. There's one poem that's a poem of her enlightenment, and it goes like this. Why is it that I, though virtuous in conduct, doing the Buddha's instruction, not lazy or proud, have not attained freedom? So she's wondering, she's done lots of practice, she's engaged in the practice, but somehow nothing hasn't worked. She hasn't attained the liberation. So that's the context of what happens next. Sitting, having washed my feet, I watched the water, the foot-washing water, flow from high ground to low. So she's poured the water over her feet to clean them, and then the water's flowing downhill a little bit, and she's watching the trickle, the flow of water go. Then I concentrated the mind, which became like a wonderful thoroughbred horse. So I think that, she got concentrated a little bit watching the water flow, like watching a river and getting absorbed and just watching the moving water. And with that concentrated mind, she got even more concentrated and like a wonderful thoroughbred horse. Then, taking a lamp, I entered my hut. Looking over the bed, I sat down on the bed. Taking a needle, I pulled out the wick from the oil lamp. Just like the going out of the lamp's flame, so was the liberation of the mind. So she got concentrated, and sometimes the mind is very still and very concentrated. It can kind of be, kind of follow something. And kind of when something changes dramatically, something in the mind can let go of. So she was very, very focused and very still and calm in her mind. And she was probably not thinking much of anything else, but just really there with taking the wick to turn off the light, to pull the wick out of the oil. And with that, everything got dark. And something about that transition to darkness, or the snuffing of the lamp, of the light, helped something release in her mind. It's partly a metaphor, because the word nibbana, nirvana, also means the extinguishing of a flame. So that was her enlightenment poem. And enlightenment poem. But there's another poem here that contains some of her verses where she's talking about the challenges she lived under, and before she became a nun. And this is these stories built up in almost mythic stories, about how this came to be. But she had a life of tragedy, and some people's tragic lives are huge, one tragedy after the other. And her tragedy was the death of her family. So she says, "Walking around, about to give birth, I found my husband dead. Before I reached my house, I gave birth on the road. For miserable me, two children died, a husband dead on the road, and mother, father, and brother burning on one funeral pyre." They'd all died at the same time. And then, in the wake of all this death, things were not good for her. She had a lot of grief, a lot of despair. She had lost everything she had. And she lived for quite a while in a charnel ground, apparently a charnel ground where her children had been placed. "I lived in the middle of a charnel ground," she wrote, "where my children's bodies were laid. With family killed, I was despised by all. But then, with husband dead, I attained the deathless. I cultivated the Noble Eightfold Path leading to the deathless. I have realized freedom, and having looked into the mirror of the Dhamma, I have removed the arrow, laid down the burden, and done what had to be done." Remove the arrow that causes suffering in the heart, the cause of suffering. So the contrast here, the poetic contrast, is she emphasizes how much death she's experienced. And then she talks about her enlightenment as having attained the deathless. So the death and deathless. And then having done what had to be done, becoming free. And so this is a possibility for all of us, that no matter what our circumstances, and whether we're young or old or poor or rich, that these examples of these nuns is a really a wonderful inspiration, a call, a kind of, I like to think of it maybe as a call to practice, that yes, it is possible to become awake, to become free. And this poetry is a real testament to this idea that, yes, it is possible. Sometimes it takes 25 years of practice, as it is for one of these nuns. Sometimes it seems to happen very, very easily and very quickly, in 7 days or even faster for some of these nuns. But regardless of how long it takes, being on the path of liberation is worthwhile. Being on the path of liberation is a path that's worth being on. And the attainment of this phenomenal spiritual freedom, release, safety, peace, tranquility, is one of the great possibilities of any human life. And we have this wonderful text, a testament to these nuns having done that and practiced that. And we have Patachara now on the altar here, that also represents this possibility for all of us to be this way and live this way with this kind of dignity and freedom. I had hoped that this we would have Patachara here for a few months, but because the wood is new and is still kind of settling, they call it, there became a little crack on the base. And so we're going to take it to where its intended home is, down in Santa Cruz at our retreat center, where the air is more humid, and we think that will kind of keep it nice and supportive, and let it kind of dry more slowly than it can here in the hot and dry Redwood City. So again, if some of you would like to meet with Tanya, who helped make this possible, the statue, and talk about these verses or some aspect of this talk today, or just meet each other, you could go the community meeting that's on Zoom right after I finish here. And probably about 10 minutes kind of warming up, that people have a chance to get there. And then in about 10 minutes, then there's a half an hour meeting with Tanya. So thank you so much, and may you all be well and safe and peaceful.